What metaphor would you choose to define the church? The Bible gives us many that have been drawn upon across the ages: a sheepfold, a vineyard, the building of God, the bride of Christ, the body of Christ, a boat. Church as a boat comes from stories like the one we have just read today. And that particular metaphor readily found its way into church architecture from the earliest centuries in which houses of worship were constructed. The seam along the vaulted ceiling of many sanctuaries, including this one, is, with a little imagination, a ship's keel. The apse, which is the area behind the choir loft, in many structures protruding out beyond the sanctuary, is like the bow of a boat pushing out beyond the main. The central area of the church where the people of God gather to worship, to gather, to sing, and to pray, to offer our lives to God in all the ways that we do, we call this the nave, from the Latin, navis, ship. All this time, we've been worshiping in a boat, which might explain the drowsiness on the part of some during sermons some Sundays. I'm sure it has to do with people taking their Dramamine before they come as a measure against seasickness while they're here. The boat metaphor has three meanings related to the faith journey, related to our life together with God in community. The first is, the nature of the faith journey is that it is uncharted. There are no road signs, no mile markers, no barriers or buffers, no guardrails, nor warning signs. None of those things appear in the wide open sea. No striping on the road, no rest areas. It is an uncharted journey that is the journey of faith for the faith community. Secondly, the journey occurs over water, if the metaphor for church is a boat. And water, as we know from the Bible, represents chaos, threat, the risk of destruction, not just in the Bible, but in life and history too. Cross currents, storms, confused seas, to which even the most sophisticated and seaworthy modern vessels are vulnerable. Finally, the most important meaning of the church as a boat is the assurance that God is with us in that boat, that in spite of these other two things, the uncharted journey, the unpredictable seas beneath our boat, we are not alone on this voyage. Christ is with us in the boat. It wasn't so in this story, not at first anyway. Jesus has his disciples cross the Galilean lake without him. It's their first time to be separated from Jesus in the Gospel of Matthew. And as they set out across the waters, an array of uncertainties fills that scene. First, they are alone without Jesus. Second, it is dark, the dead of night, Matthew tells us, the fourth watch, 3 to 6 a.m. They're alone. It's dark. In this moment, they're far from the shore. And then one more thing that makes all the difference. It's stormy, which means no coordinates, no bearings, no stars, no moon, no horizon, a precarious situation even for people accustomed to the water and the boat. And then add to that the storm itself, the buffeting, the battering, the pitching, the word used in Matthew's story about the waves and wind buffeting the boat is the same word used to speak of demons, tormenting. The waves, the winds, torment the boat. I like how one translator lifts that word out of the Greek, inventing a verb from a noun. Ordealizing is what happens to that boat that night in the dark, in the storm, with the disciples alone. Ordealizing. I like that verb. I think I've found a word that can apply to our year, in fact. This has been an ordealizing year. Jesus approaches the disciples on the water in some mysterious and mystical way and says three things. First, he says, take courage. Last, he says, be not afraid. And in the middle, it is I. Except really, there's no predicate nominative in the Greek. The words there read more familiarly to us, not it is I, but I am. And immediately there's a resonance for us with those words, that name, that idea. I am is the name God gives to God's own self from the pages of Exodus forward. Jesus, in stating that I am, is conveying that he's mediating God's presence. And immediately the words on either side of that take on a richer, fuller meaning. Have courage. Be not afraid. Why? Because I am. God is near. Peter is not so sure. This whole thing makes him skeptical, even cynical, which reveals to us that it's not just moderns and postmoderns who are skeptical and even cynical. Not only moderns and postmoderns experience something brilliant that immediately turns to boring, or something sublime that is immediately suspect. It happens to Peter too, in a heartbeat. If it is really you, Peter says to Jesus, who is out there on the water, it's his doubting Thomas moment. Unless I place my hands in the holes where the nails were and in his open side, I will not believe the Christ is risen. It's Peter's doubting Thomas moment. We could say it's his doubting, fill in the blank here with your name or mine, moment. We've all had those moments, those seasons, stretches of years even, of uncertainty, wrestling with, wondering about, maybe totally dismissing or forgetting the whole question of what faith is and how to live it, what hope is and how to hold it, what love is and how to accept it and channel it into life. If it is really you, Peter says to Jesus, bid me come. The results are checkered. Peter steps out, begins, then loses his footing and starts to sink beneath the waves. Peter is every man. Peter is every woman. Faith, will it be faith or fear? Will it be devotion or doubt? These things vie for primacy in the human heart and head And not only when it's time to walk on water on the troubled lake in the dark during the storm, but even maybe more on dry land in broad daylight, happy campers all around. Sometimes it's with the firmest footing that the deepest doubting can afford to come our way. Live alone in a paradise. That makes me think of two. Fear or faith? Which will it be, doubt or devotion? It depends on the day, doesn't it, for you and for me? The disposition, the need of the moment, the energy level that we have. Lately, it depends on what we could call the COVID coping quotient. You know what I mean? Fear or faith, doubt or devotion, where are you today? Where are you in these days and nights, in this troubled season? With Jesus' help, Peter makes it back into the boat, and then they all make it safely to shore. Right as the sun is beginning to rise, the clouds from the night storm are beginning to clear. They climb out of the boat, and in the dawning light, they kneel there on terra firma, hallelujah, and worship Jesus. What a story. Except that's not Matthew's story. They don't wait for land, these disciples in the boat. They don't wait to land. They don't wait for light to come. They don't wait to find their bearings. They don't wait for terra firma beneath their feet to recognize and respond to the holiness of this figure. Right then and there, in the dark, far from shore, with no bearings or orientation for their boat, they worship Jesus in the boat. On the water, he had said to them, I am. In the boat, they say to him, you are. Worshiping in a boat? Yes. It's what we've always done. We may not have realized it, but it is how we practice our faith when we gather to worship. Come into this room, acknowledging as we do that we don't know what the future holds. And also that second thing, that there are forces around us, beneath us, even within us, that are threatening, unsettling, disorienting, discouraging, maybe depressing and frightening. And then that third thing, when we gather in this room to worship in a boat, that third thing, that we are not alone, that God is with us. And that is the only assurance we need. It's just a way of practicing for life, this rhythm of worship that is ours in a boat. Practicing for a season, for example, of displacement and disruption like no other season we've ever known, when it is as though everything we do is in a battered, buffeted boat. Getting groceries in a boat these days. Working in a boat, managing a business in a boat, raising children in a boat, sending them off to school in a boat, keeping them at home in a boat, celebrating a birthday in a boat, interviewing for a job in a boat, gathering for Zoom conversations with the in and out of audio and video and internet and all the rest, as though we were meeting in a boat. Everything we do is as though in a boat these days. Maintaining friendships in a boat. Offering caring ministries in a boat. Seeking social justice in a boat, governing in a boat, vacationing in a boat, burying our beloved dead in a boat, comforting the bereaved, tending to the sick in a boat. And then, of course, back where we started, worshiping in a boat, preaching into camera, singing into masks, offering music into an empty room, and yet not. In all these awkward things with the buffeting and the battering, the worship in a boat that is tipping and turning and tossing, still worshiping as though we were in the presence of the Holy One, reaching one another, us reaching you, you, us, wherever you are, whoever you are, however we make this circle. When Laura reaches her hands up toward the children, I sense that there are little ones out there leaning just slightly forward, and maybe some grown-ups too, to respond to that gesture of welcome and worship. In moments, in ways, majoring in the mystical and the metaphysical, we feel a connection, a closeness, in some ways even deeper than before. Worshiping in a boat, we're simply repeating the miracle in this story. The other miracle, there's the walking on water, of course, the other miracle, the miracle that in spite of the fact that we are in the dark, on the water, without being able to see what's out there, what's ahead, what's beneath us, disciples of Jesus worship him right then and there. The Laurel Heights Sanctuary exterior was in need of significant refurbishing. And thanks to a generous church, visionary leadership, guided by our own Mike McGlone, Ann McGlone, and so many others gathering at that table to plan that project, and then the gifted artisans who undertook it, that project was funded and undertaken and completed within the last 12 months. What does that accomplishment mean? At least two things. First, it means that a congregation stepped up to a responsibility and a privilege to preserve and protect a century-old building in infrastructural ways that would become essential to its long-term integrity and viability on this corner and in this city and beyond. That's first. And then it means something else too. To paraphrase Jim Laney, every renovated building is a declaration. And ours is this. The Laurel Heights congregation is ready to continue worshiping in this grand and beautiful boat, practicing week after week the faith that encourages us to trust that in this uncharted journey across uncharted waters called a COVID-19 life experience, or called any life experience before a virus ever showed up, life experience anytime, we believe that God is with us. And as Ralph Abernathy once put it, while we are not assured of what the future holds, we are assured of who holds the future. I tend to think, maybe you're with me here, that it's nip and tuck in our lives any given day, and certainly in this day, this time, this season, nip and tuck between fear and faith, doubt and devotion. But when we gather here, when we gather here, whether in person or online, whether together or remotely, fear begins a gradual surrender to faith, and doubt can be offered up as though it were just a part of the heart's devotion, part of the gift, part of the mystery, part of the grace of worshiping in a boat.